This is CliffCentral.com.
Sanbona Nonke, welcome to the show. It is, frankly speaking, 1 hour of hot potato issues in South Africa. Hey, there is no bigger hot potato issue than the micro issue of racism in St. John's. It is blown up in South Africa, not only in the northern suburbs of Johannesburg, but across the country. Unbelievable, the response. We're going to be hitting that up. Dumelang, Jorge-san.
Like, sir. Lere.
Good day. When guy?
Ay, as bar, brak. As bar.
Par, par. That's all I know about Pretoria.
You can't just.
But it can happen anytime.
In politics, they say, don't just come and ejaculate that thing because it's the only thing you know. We must wait for the right moments.
But papar is any moment, really.
No, there's no such moment. Papar is a specific moment.
We're sharing a mic today, which is quite intimate, I must say. I've never looked into your eyes as much as this right now. It's quite scary. They're quite beautiful eyes, actually. Has anyone ever told you that?
No.
What are we talking about today, Rory?
So this St. John's incident has been a big issue in the country. Racism, boring, that's what we're known for. It is a topical issue. It's raised a lot of questions. Obviously, this topic has been done ad nauseum on the other stations and so on, so we're not going to jump into it. I think the interesting question that it raises is this whole issue, and we've seen it in a number of incidents. We did a show on the Girls High, Pretoria Girls High situation and the hair situation there. We did a show recently about what's happening in education, where the governing body...
teachers, right?
Yeah. Where the white governing body was saying no. Everything is good, but the black teachers were saying no, everything is horrible. So it increasingly just raises the issue of black skins in white schools. Say, what exactly is going on within primarily our private schools and former Model C schools? And the idea of, you know, how do black skins find their space in these? Is there even an issue, or is just black people causing trouble as usual again?
You. That's hectic, eh? What you just said, that's hectic. I don't know. Take that back. Why are you doing that?
For who?
The interesting question for me, Rory, is this idea of white schools. In a country where we have 80% of black skins, what is a white school right now in your definition, before we get to our guests?
Well, white schools are schools that were formerly reserved to white people, right? So most of the private schools, former Model C schools, those are white schools. And I think in terms of defining white, it's not just about the quantity of learners that are white in these spaces. It's particularly the culture, the traditions, the way the school carries itself. Does it carry itself in a way that represents Africans for being African, or does it represent, I mean, we've seen incidents now of schools that are primarily black learners, where certain policies around hair and so on are actually driven for learners that are white, not for black learners. So I think that the concept needs to be unpacked a little bit more around what we mean by white schools, but it's certainly, we are talking about the majority of private schools and former Model C schools, particularly the private schools that, not the dodgy fly-by-night private schools in town, but the private schools that were formerly reserved for white people.
All right, if you've got a point on this, you've got a question to our guests, we've got some very interesting guests today. If you've got any thoughts that you want to share with us, please hit us up on Cliff Central on what is that? WeChat? Yeah? It's WeChat. Cliff Central on WeChat, as well as on Twitter, Yebo_LEVY or Rory Shabalala, and we'll take some of those comments. I must say, Rory, like, this issue's gone crazy on my personal Facebook
page. Why are you so passionate about it? Because I didn't want to do this topic. Today, it's you trying to push this topic. Why do you care?
I care because the stigmatization and socialization of our young minds is very important.
Boring. What is it to you?
What is it to me? I want to see a space where people can be people for what they are and bring what they are to the table. And I think private schools, you know, personally, I had a situation where I went to one of these private schools and I was I was a minority in a way because I was a different religion to the private school. And yes, I got totally, totally slammed and bullied for that, you know. The only Jewish person in the school of a Catholics. And so I know what it's like, and that's not even on a social level, right? Being black has been socialized as being wrong in these spaces.
You've been black before?
No. That's not what I'm saying. Oh. I'm just saying that I've seen that specific case through a number of different examples. And, you know, the St. John's thing, I suppose, was just another, yet another example in a whole bunch of things. So, of course, you don't want to speak to the white guy about being black. So let's introduce our guests. and then we can take, maybe they can introduce themselves, actually. Let's start. Ladies first.
Wow, okay. Put me on the spot.
Of course. Men are trash, remember. I don't remember those hashtags.
My name is Glenna.
You don't have a surname, Glenna.
Glenna Mdluli.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm a VIT student.
Uh-huh. And you are an ex-which school?
I was at Rodine
uh-huh.
School.
Wow, Rodine.
Class of?
Class of 2013.
Jeez, you really, she can't hide now, hey?
Yeah, right. You've pretty much like...
Glenna, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the show. Next in line is?
Hi, my name is Irvin Lichlo. I'm an ex-St. David's old boy. I matriculated in year 2000.
Yeah, now you're the old man in the room. Hey, that's ridiculous. Hey?
My name is Mpilo Mseleku. I was the head of school of St. John's last year.
Mpilo was the head boy of St. John's last year. And this guy has the most St. John's haircut I've ever seen in my life. Not really, Rory. I think that is honestly, that's what it's like.
I went to a government school. I can't tell.
Skush, skush.
I just had to be bald all the time, so I can't tell.
So we're going to speak to these guys about their experiences in schools. Maybe let's just get a bit of background to how you came to these schools. Bilo, why don't we start with you? Like, what's your background? Where'd you come from? I know that's already a classist situation, right? But these schools are expensive. All of them are private. We're talking...
Why are you asking that question?
Because I want to know where people come from and where they... Because, okay, you're right. How does this question come about? There is a growing trend and thought process that a lot of black individuals in private schools have to assimilate to their surroundings. I.e. they're not from that surrounding and therefore have to assimilate into that surrounding. So I'm just trying to understand, was it an assimilation by a school or was this always the case? Is that okay, Rory? Are you happy with that?
No, I'm just like, it's a curious question.
Go on,
how did you black people find yourselves at St. John? So, Mpilo, how did you, young black chap, find yourself at St. John?
Because you shouldn't really be there. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. That's what you said.
Sorry, no, that's not what I meant. But okay, fine.
Well, it feels like that sometimes, that you shouldn't be there.
All right.
I began attending St. John's as a whole, I think when I was 6 years old. And wow. I graduated throughout from the primary school to the high school. And as I progressed through the high school, I started to feel more and more alienated as I became sort of more aware of social issues and sort of realized that everything was very Eurocentric, which feels out of place in a South African context, especially because the school parades itself as a world-class Christian school in Africa. Mm-hmm. Yet the demographics and the cultural trends set there completely contradict this.
I'm keen to get into it in a bit, but I find it curious that a high school boy who knows nothing else but St. John's would feel that this doesn't feel like South Africa, because that's all you knew. So I want to come back to that, but let's just get the other perspectives in the room. So your background, Irvin?
Right, so I got into St. David's on an academic scholarship. St. David's in 1990, post-1994, began an active program of integration. They wanted to get more people of color into the school environment to make it more representative of the South African situation. And I was one of the first students to benefit from the program.
And this was driven by?
Driven by the headmaster at the time, Mr. Paul Eady.
The infamous Paul Eady. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about him, just for people who don't know who Paul Eady is.
All right, so...
Paul, in the context of recent events.
All right, so Paul Eady is the current headmaster of St. John's, and he was roundly pilloried Is that even a word? Anyway.
It's a word now.
It's a word now. David's education.
It's a word now. We're taking everything. We're taking everything. It's a word now.
We're taking everything.
It's a word now. All right.
He was basically taken to the cleaners by all and sundry because St. John's policy was viewed as being towards the offending teacher, was viewed as being a bit too soft and not representative of the seriousness of the crime.
Cleaner.
I came from Botswana. Mm-hmm. I went to primary there for about till grade 4, and then I moved to SA, went to primary, and then only went to Rodin for high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just want to head back to Irvin. Irvin is the infamous Irvin now, who wrote in defense of Paul Edie an article, or posted online as well on our Twitter, but you can also check it out if you just Google in defense of Paul Edie. He has a bit of a personal story there, which is very interesting. Very different backgrounds. Rory, you want to come back to Mpilo.
Yeah, so Mpilo, how did this issue, so you're the former head boy just last year. So when this issue broke, how did this land within the alumni community?
Broke this year.
So this particular issue, when it broke, if you say this year, when did this thing break? Did it break earlier than we thought?
So obviously last year at St. John's, myself and the prefect body tried very hard to challenge the eurocentricity of St. John's, which is a private school, so it perhaps can be used as a metaphor for all private schools in South Africa. And we were part of like a group of people who started to not only criticize institutional racism, but also overt racism in St. John's. And as a result of that, the teacher who resigned from St. John's was one of the people we targeted in terms of exposing his racist acts. So we, the students of last year, were aware of this thing rumbling because we submitted the stuff to Mr. Paul Edie last year, and it was actually disappointing that it took so long to be resolved. And that there were...
So this thing actually began much earlier. It's just it bubbled up now.
Yes. There was actually last year, after we first submitted the list of complaints that we had and the list of accounts of exact racist incidents, it was dealt with, but dealt with very unsatisfactorily because the housemaster in question only had to resign from his post as housemaster, and it was done
this
very
was a
discreetly.
Different teacher.
It was the same teacher.
Oh, it was the same teacher.
And then there were complaints as a result of that poor effort by the school, which made it blow up this year.
Let's just understand this a little bit, guys, because I think one of the things around racism in 2017 is it has a very different face as opposed to racism in 1984, which was, big, burly person swearing the K word all over the place and beating people. Now is very subtle and what was the word you used?
Institutional.
Institutional. So help me understand, guys, just in your personal experiences, and feel free to chip in where you want, what is racist in your, what racist remarks in your schooling career have been thrown at you in this subtle way? Because I think a large percentage of school boys and girls and teachers will go, I'm not racist. You know, this is not me. I'm not racist. But they don't even know what they're doing because it is so underground. It's so socialized that they actually don't have an understanding of, hey, this actually hurts me because you're saying this because of my color. So help me understand, guys. Anyone can go.
From my own perspective, last year we tried to really challenge institutional racism because we felt that it was what allowed overt racism to sometimes manifest and also allowed overt racism to be sort of accepted because there were no implementations in place that would resolve this when it occurred. So I think just like in terms of the culture of the schools, in terms of the demographics of the schools, in terms of the staff body being predominantly white, you already set a precedent where authoritarian figures are white and where the general trend of the boys is white, which is warping sort of what South Africa should be to a black boy. And then in terms of specific examples, I just think...
Just on that, when do you realize this as a, I mean, we must have, I don't know, maybe we were just a different, we just had a different software version at school, but how is a teenager, figuring, you know what, actually this feels funny. You know, especially if you've been going to that school for your whole life. Mm.
Especially when you're trained to sort of admire the school and appreciate what the school
gives you. So at which point and what drives this thing that, first of all, there's something different and it's certainly something better than what I'm experiencing now. What is it that drove that, let's call it consciousness at such a young age?
For me, it's sort of the contrast between my family life and sort of what I experienced at St. John's. And obviously because my family is a black family, I have relatives who don't have the opportunities I have. And just seeing the fact that they are literally deprived of privilege and that the best institutions in the country are predominantly white while the country is black, it's a very strong contrast.
But what bugs you about that? I think that's so there's somebody sitting at home is like, so they're white, what bugs you about the fact that they're white? Yes, over time with more money and investment, you know, the typical thing. Oh, let's invest in education and eventually there'll be... What do you mean that they're white? Is it like there's white teachers, Irvin?
And to tag on to that question, you were saying that it's in St. David's there was a culture and an institutionalized
St.
form
John's.
Of St. John's, sorry. There was an institutionalized form of racism. For me, because it's been years since I've been in school, I'd love it. I'd love to know a specific example of what you mean by institutionalized racism. Do you mean that the teacher mix is not representative of the country, or do you mean that attitudes and conduct of the teachers are representative of an elitist point of view? Just narrow it down for me.
Sorry, can I just comment on that? I think also it's the code of conduct of schools.
Absolutely.
That literally that's what they...
How so? Tell us more about that.
Well, in terms of my experience, I think, you know, the code of conduct of, you know, my school was, in a way, it did. It bashed, you know, black girls.
In what way? Like, give me examples.
For example, I say the way we... And I don't want to go to the hair issue because that's not the only thing, you know? But, on our hair, our braids have to be a certain way. Mm. Sometimes you can't have, you know, you can't have your hair... Afros, for example. I had, one incident when I was in, I think, grade 9. And I had my hair out because I did not like, you know, if I don't have braids, it's my natural hair. Mm. And I had, you know, a teacher, you know, the deputy head actually, you know, tell me that my hair is, you know, it's untamable. And it's just, you know, comments like that. Yeah.
Below anything other than hair that you picked up?
For me, the most striking personal examples are sort of the pronunciation of names. Mm-hmm. Sort of like just disregarded if you're a black pupil. They don't attempt to. They'll even call you somebody else's name as opposed to just struggling to say it. So clearly there's no effort into like reading your name because you're a black boy. And then also just if a group of black boys are gathered together, there's automatically the suspicion that they're up to something devious or something, and you can see the teachers looking at you weirdly. And to think that you're doing this to children who are just trying to have fun with their friends is very messed up and distorted. And then also, they don't take your complaints seriously when you complain about racism. They sort of make it seem like it's a figment of your imagination or that you're crying for no reason when you suspect that if a white people is complaining, it would be taken far more seriously.
Okay. So,
And just to add on to that, I was a boarder. So, that in itself alone.
As dimensions.
As well, oh,
yeah. So, being a boarder, a lot of the times, you know, they would make comments like, you know, give the leftovers to the boarders. Certain things like that.
Were boarders just black?
They were just black.
Oh, really?
You would find like one white person.
Okay.
And that's just, everyone knew the boarders were black.
All right. So within that context, Irvin jumps into the picture and he's like, wait, I have empathy for this man. And the empathy that you had was for the white headmaster. It wasn't for all of these complaining, moping black students. Tell us a little bit about how you jump into this and why it is that out of all the number of different characters in this particular story, the one that you most connected with and that you felt empathy for was Paul Eady, who was the headmaster, who by media accounts had botched up the handling of this particular situation.
Well, when you're the leader of any group or organization, and that organization botches up, I suppose you lay the dog's breakfast at the foot of the leader. So in that sense, yeah, you know, perhaps he is responsible. My defense of Mr. Paul Eady just came out of, not so much out of the greater issue, which I think definitely still needs debate, but over the personal character and motivations of the person. My experience of Mr. Eady during the time he was at St. David's was of a person that certainly, if anything, tried to end racism in school, as opposed to enabling it as he was kind of labeled by Eusebius. That was my motivation.
Name and shame. You named our friend Eusebius. So this reminds me, Andrew, of a show that we did many, many moons ago called Can Bad People Do Good? Remember that show?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
So is it your contention that just because this man has some good qualities, he can't be an enabler of racism? Was that your...
Not at all. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that my personal experience of Mr. Paul Eady was of a man who didn't see me as a black boy when I was in school. Whenever I dealt with
Wasn't
them,
that a problem? Because from what I'm hearing from the other co-hosts, they're saying we aren't seen as black people, so we're being forced to become something other than what we are. So you're saying he didn't see me as a black boy, so he just like saw me as...
No.
Why couldn't he see you as a black boy?
He never saw me as a black boy. He never saw me as a white boy. He saw me as a young person with potential. And in his interactions with me, his sole motivation was to try and bring the best out of me.
You laugh. Why can't you see this teacher as just a man who made a mistake and not see him as a white teacher that did a racist act?
You should be able to be responsible for what you say. Everything, every action you do, there's a consequence for it. So you cannot...
Yeah, but
defend
I'm not excusing the teacher. We're talking about Mr. Eady here.
Yeah. Same thing.
So how is he enabling racism?
I worked quite closely with Mr. Eady last year, obviously as the head of school. Mm. And I can agree with
Irvin,
mm-hmm. Regarding Mr. Eady's character, because when you speak to him, when you work with him, it is a very nice environment, and you wouldn't say he's a bad person, I don't think. But as we try to forward our sort of Waking Up to Your Privilege campaign and sort of discussing, criticizing, and sort of just opening discussions regarding race, we saw perceived like an inability to act morally when it came to bigotry, and rather an inclination to talk and to say the right things as he did on the radio, but not to actually do the right things. Because I think in South Africa, you cannot condone racism in any way. It has to be punished by the highest forms possible, considering our history.
You are defending his... You're defending his character. Is that what you say?
Yeah, his character and his personal motivations and how he deals with people.
But as a principal headmaster of a certain school and such an incident happens, are you going to...
Many incidents happen.
Many, exactly.
There was very many incidents that this housemaster was guilty of.
But are you going to defend that and say that, okay, as a headmaster, still his character... It's still good.
All right, so
and allowing that.
So let's touch base then on this incident, because I'd love to have some actual clarity. So you're saying there was a number of complaints that were put forward. Following the complaints, was there any investigation that happened?
After the complaints were put forward to Mr. Eady by our prefect body, and I think there was also a teacher who did it independently. After that, Mr. Eady dealt with it privately, and a letter was given to a number of matrics and boys from the housemaster's house saying that he had been forced to step down for ill-advised comments, not even owning the fact that it's racist behavior, but rather trying to cover it up and sort of trivialize it, which is the culture that we generally enjoyed at St. John's. So, and then after multiple parents found out about this and drove for harder sanctions and sort of punishment, the sort of new campaign began, because we reported this in December last year.
Just before you answer that, just if anyone's joined us on the show, it's heating up very quickly here. Cleaner's eyes are about to kill someone, I think, you know, which is exciting for me. If you've just joined the show, frankly speaking, black skins in white schools following the incidents happening at St. John's. We've got three former private school alumni from different schools, different years, different experiences, and we're chatting to them. If you want to join the conversation, hit us up WeChat Cliff Central or at Yebo_Levy and at Rory Shabalala. Guys, I wanna get out of St. John's for just a second.
Before you do, I'm now curious.
Yeah,
Irvin,
you
asked for some background. You got some background.
Yes.
Given that background,
absolutely.
Are you going to retract your letter?
No. And the reason why I'm saying I don't want to retract it is because of the central point of my letter, which was that racism, although it's bad, if you just punish it and say that's the end of it, that's not fixing the problem. All that's going to happen is you're just going to drive the issue further underground.
So let me ask you a question. Mm. The trampling of dignity.
Mm-hmm.
If you just excuse it.
No. Not saying excuse it.
But what you're saying is, if racism, if you punish it, so come down hard on it, you drive it further underground. I'm saying if it's on the flip side of the racism is a trampling of someone's dignity. So
absolutely.
So children's dignity in this particular case. So are you saying that then that if we just like, you know, let's just forgive this? Are we assuming that over time that this ends up as a good news story?
No. So what I'm saying is this, is that punishment on its own, no matter the level of sanction that you choose, whether it's a soft sanction or it's a hard sanction, on its own doesn't go far enough to solving the issue. All that's going to happen is that opinions around the debate are going to become entrenched, and instead of having the issue of racism in schools and prejudice in schools being dealt with and eliminated as a challenge, all that you do is just further entrench those opinions and create a bigger issue further down the line.
Lena, you want to say something quickly?
No, I was gonna pose a question to him. Say you have, do you have a daughter?
I have a son.
You have a son. Now, for your son, if those remarks were directed to him, how would you feel? And how would that change how you perceive?
If he was labeled publicly as another black underachiever,
which
is one of the quotes that the housemaster said, how would you feel?
How would you feel? And how would you approach?
I'd be absolutely pissed off and I'd demand justice. But part of justice is giving an opportunity to the offender to redeem themselves. That's my belief.
But you'd allow your son to continue to go to an environment which has someone in it who has been guilty of racism?
Well, that would very much depend on the context with which the teacher's been allowed to continue. From what I understand, the teacher was stripped of all responsibility, given a final written warning, and advised that if he repeats such conduct, that would be the end of his career.
No, Irvin, that's defending.
Irvin, I'm just very quickly. I mean, I'm not black, the only non-black in the room. If my kid was told that he was a dirty this or an underachiever that or whatever the case, regardless of skin color now, like it could be about religion, it could be about the way he or she wears her hair.
No, absolutely.
You know,
his sexuality.
Dude, you'd be pissed, man. You want that guy to be fired, right?
No, but no. In Irvin's defense.
In defense of Irvin now?
Yes. in Irvin. I have never been, no one's ever said that I was consistent on these things, but you guys are all trying to impose your own voice. You literally just said you would be pissed. He says, no, I would be, but the way in which I'd want it dealt with
would be
different to what you guys are saying it should have been dealt with. So what I'm hearing from everyone else is there was only one sanction, and that was for this guy to get fired. Irvin is saying, hey, look, yes, I disagree with what happened, but there might be I'm open to suggestion that there might be other ways of dealing with it. So I'm hearing where he's coming from, and I think we shouldn't lose that voice in the room by shouting it down. I'm keen to understand what drove this, because he represents many other parents, maybe, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look
black parents.
He's a black parent. Are you a black parent?
No, I'm not a black parent, but I'm a
black... There's a black parent.
There's a black parent.
Well, there's a black parent. Did you see the look she just gave me? Go ahead. Put words to the look you just gave me.
That should tell you.
All right. So when I was in St. David's, this is a central motivation for my... With punishment has to come an opportunity for redemption. I did something that was like really, really bad. If you know, for details, you can read it. If Mr. Edie wanted to perpetuate and continue the culture of elitism at St. David's, he could have used that as a perfect opportunity to have me suspended or even expelled. But instead, he guided me towards understanding for myself how my actions were wrong, and gave me an opportunity to redeem myself. So my reading of the situation that happened at St. John's was that Mr. E's drive was to try at least to give an opportunity to this teacher to redeem himself. Whether or not the time was right, or it was too late, or that too much harm had been done by the teacher, I think that's not what I'm arguing, because I'm not close enough to the situation in St. John's to make a judgment.
The challenge I have with Irvin's position is that he bases his view on public policy on his own moment of redemption. And I think the challenge that I have with that is that so what did those kids do to deserve, you know, being subjected to sounds like repeated incidents like this? But I want us to lift this out of the St. John's perspective and just to speak a little bit more broadly around black skins in white schools. But Bilo, you want to jump in quickly with the last comment on the St. John's incident?
Yeah, just my last comment on this is that I completely understand what you're saying in terms of restorative punishment. But I do think that in terms of what happened with you and Mr. Edie back then and what happened now, there are key differences in that you were a young child and this is a full-grown adult, and your crime was, I don't know if it was victimless or not, but this crime has many victims, and especially in the context of South Africa, when you think about our past, for someone to be saying racially abusive things to young children 23 years or whatever after apartheid has ended, when we're supposed to be moving towards a new South Africa, if you allow this to exist and for him to escape, still allowed to engage with students. Just think about the culture and precedent you're setting in these schools. And I think that's why eventually, under the pressure of the MEC, they had to push for him to resign.
Without delving too much into the character and motivations of the teacher in question, your position, I understand completely and fully, and for what happened to students, I don't know if you were personally affected, but to black students in St. David's by this teacher, absolutely the worst thing that could ever happen to a child that just wants to better themselves and improve themselves. For me though, if I had to choose a lesson that I'd want my son to take out of this situation, is that even the very worst of people can find a path to a better version of themselves.
For me, my issue is that this doesn't happen in a vacuum. The fact that the teacher is allowed to continue working just serves to like reinforce the sort of Eurocentric attitudes and the institutional racism perceived in these schools. And that's why many old students at these schools who are black feel very let down and hurt when they leave these schools.
And he's not the only one.
Did just one question. Did the teacher show any remorse?
I don't think so, because when I was at St. John's, there were many times when people told him that what he was saying was racist, and he clearly didn't care.
Mm.
And even some of the comments he said, it showed that he was aware that people were challenging his racist views, and that he felt that because they were children, because they were black, their opinions didn't matter, and that he could carry on scot-free because he believed the system would defend him, as it tried to.
Mm. If you just joined us, we're speaking black skins in white schools, post the St. John's discussion. We're looking into what it's like to be black in these private schools. Three very, very different experiences, different age groups, different schools. Very interesting debate. Please add your thoughts if you've got any to what our guests are saying. Glenna, you've been bursting at the seams, I feel like. You want to say it all and then say nothing at the same time. So help me. Like, I'm giving it to you now. What are we missing here? As the men in the room here, what's going on here? Like,
no, I've been listening, you know, I've been trying to take everything in on what they're saying, but I really hear what you're saying. I think what you're saying is really important.
And
it's so true, yes.
Uh-huh.
I can't really relate with Mr. here.
Urban, how can Urban, you not get this right?
Sorry. I can't really relate with you because, you know, I can only perceive this from my experiences and me being a black girl.
Can I challenge that?
Model C school.
I imagine you can relate to that because you guys are very vocal now that you've left. Was it? What stopped you guys from shutting those two schools down the same way Pretoria Girls High School students shut their schools down when they got sick and tired of this? You guys sat there as leaders in the schools, I imagine, and one can argue is like, yeah, these guys are speaking now, but where were their voices back then?
I was not a prefect or anything at Rodine.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. However, after the incident of Pretoria Girls, obviously we picked on that, and a girl, actually one of my friends, a close friend of mine, she started a group on Facebook on where we had a space where we could talk about our experiences, our grievances. It's just,
why didn't you speak about them when you were at school? What was, I'm not saying you didn't feel them, because clearly you did, right? But why is it that the system wins in the situation? Because it's like, oh, I'm just going to keep quiet, do my thing, and then I'll leave, and then, you know.
For the most part, I was, you know, I was labeled as a rebel. So if I had to say anything, it would, that image, like, immediately would be, you know, put down. Like, I would probably, I'm telling you, I would be at the deputy headmistress office, like, every week. Because,
I want to, Bilo, I'm going to come to you now, but this is why I was saying you can relate, in the sense that Irvin is, like, saying, look, for the sake of the peace, or whatever it is, his beliefs, or whatever, I'm willing to give this person restorative, Mbilo, you called it restorative?
Justice.
Restorative justice, all right? You're saying that for the sake of me not ending up at the principal's office, I kind of let it slip until I felt I had a voice outside of the system, right? So,
but
Mbilo, you say no, you were shaking, you're like, I stood up.
Sorry. No. I definitely did. However, there comes a point in time where that goes amongst, like, girls themselves. They start thinking the way, you know, teachers do. They start they basically become what?
Assimilate, right?
Yeah. You know, you get used to that environment.
Mpilo, let's come to you. You've been desperate to chip in here.
Personally, last year at St. John's, you can even check the accounts, it was also very publicized. We ran multiple campaigns in terms of awakening people to their privileges racially, sexually, in terms of their orientation, and in terms of their gender. And the only reason we were able to supersede the sort of culture of secrecy that these schools create, where they don't want you to challenge ideals, where they don't want you to vocalize your thoughts. The only reason we could supersede that was because myself and the second prefect were black boys, and they literally had to listen to us. But even then, there was so much attempt to stifle us. We had teachers ripping down our posters, which were meant to open discussions. We had teachers accusing us of being radical, just trying to paint us in the worst possible light, when all we're trying to do is allow boys to speak their opinions.
Mm. You could, Klina, also challenge Rory here, you know, and say, what did you do at school? You know, what he didn't tell you, that he also went to one of these schools that is former Model C schools, and what did he do sitting here? Because you were also part of a system that you didn't complain about and shout about until afterwards.
Yeah, where were you?
Yeah, where were you?
We did not have hair issues back in my time.
That's no, that's not the thing. That is not a thing. That's not a thing.
So I think what Andrew's trying to drive at is something that for me has been the big elephant in the room, which is that when you go to these schools, when you go to these private elite schools, their code of conduct and their mission and their aim is designed to transform you from being just another kid into being a gentleman or gentle lady, you know, of the community. And I think the question that we, you know, that I think should be part of this debate is does the definition of gentleman or gentle lady still apply to the new South Africa? Is it representative of the whole of South Africa, or is it just representative of what it was to be a gentleman or gentle lady, you know, back in pre-94?
I think it's an archaic idea of what a gentleman is that they perpetuate. It's sort of the old white male, cis white male who gets what he wants and works hard and stuff like
what
that.
What is a cis white male, please, for our listeners? We don't know these things. Cis white.
born before 94.
Born before freeze. What's a cis white male?
It's essentially the top of the hierarchical privilege food chain. The white male who is straight, heterosexual, and
Jewish,
privileged. Privileged.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And
cool.
Sort
Thank
of
you.
Same with us, same with women, you know, all our mistress, like our heads, they were white women, and I don't see how they could, you know,
Rodine
understand.
Rodine has currently four black teachers. Three of them are vernacular language teachers, so Zulu and Sotho, and one is a history teacher.
Yep.
Right, so there's an issue there. Irvin, I want to ask you something quickly, because I can't relate to St. John's or Rodine simply because I wasn't there, but I was 1 year behind you at St. David's. The striking thing for me was how few black boys at the time were in St. David's, right? And I mean, fine, it was a long time ago, but still it was post-apartheid. So that's the first striking thing. The second thing, and this is the question that I want to ask you, were you ever allowed to be black at St. David's?
That alone yourself.
What does it mean to be black?
Whatever you identify yourself as being black. So I know personally, Irvin doesn't speak vernacular languages, right? So it's not about speaking a language or whatever, but just being black and bringing whatever your blackness is into the space.
It's a good question, Andrew. I suppose the best answer I could give to that is that the culture that was promulgated at St. David's was overwhelmingly that you had to fit into a model of a perfect student. You had to be perfectly good at your academics, or perfectly try. You had to be perfectly good at sports, or perfectly try. You had to be perfectly involved in cultural activities, or perfectly try. You know, in all of these activities and spaces that you were driven into and shaped and modeled, there was no real drive made towards finding your own individuality. I think very much today in today's situation in private schools, I think that culture persists, which in the 21st century probably does need to be addressed, you know?
You know why I'm asking this, Irvin, is because the reason I'm asking, as the white guy in the room who went through a private school, I never saw race. And this is the interesting thing. It was the DA non-racialism, right?
Mm.
I never saw race because race wasn't in my face.
Exactly.
And no black person in the school was black in a way. They all assimilated to be white, European, what you call Eurocentric, and so on and so on. Now, this is back in the day, right? This is a long time ago. Mm. So it's unbelievable that it seems like, from your experiences, it continues today.
It's still persisting.
But it's only when I started working outside of the four walls of St. David's that I realized, hold on a second, what the hell's going on here? Like, this isn't South Africa. This isn't even trying to be South Africa. This is trying to be a jock, you know, private school boy. Rugby is first, and depending on where you are, and also girls and rugby. You know, like, it's ridiculous.
So
I want to challenge. I want to challenge that because you're
challenging.
No, because you're. It's like so. You didn't. None of them were black. What does it mean to be black? I'm still confused. What is it? Are you saying that you didn't see black people because you couldn't see black people, or because they weren't behaving black? What does behaving black? What does it mean? I'm really like, you know, we speak about, you know, the ability to behave black, but we don't define it, and I think this is part of the problem within these spaces. And there's a conversation that I actually want us to have before we close the show around. So what are the changes that we want to see that will begin to say that, you know, our schools are, and we've got the hair example, but what must we change the house names? Must we change the school names? How does a school behave in a way that represents blackness? Because we need to help these guys, because some of them, maybe like Paul Edie, are genuinely want to try, but they're just clueless. It's not even, you know, half of their fault is ignorance, not even that they're trying to be willfully racist.
Yeah, my biggest issue with that standpoint, though, is that they don't want to have the discussions. But anyway, what I wanted to say is that I think in Irvin's instance, it's a different situation to the two of us, because I read in your article there are only two black boys. Mm-hmm. For us, I think there were 20. So it's already a different environment where now there are more people coming from their own African environment or their own cultural environment, who perhaps speak their vernaculars, who perhaps listen to their own music and stuff. And when they go into these white campuses, they feel ostracized and alienated when they act the way they do at home. They're made to feel lesser, made to feel foreign in their own country, especially when you consider the demographic realities of South Africa.
Yeah. So you've said the first thing. So I'm hoping that a lot of these headmasters listen to the show, and that's what I'm trying to get at. Okay, so what does a different type of space look like? And I think the first thing you've said there is be open to having these conversations.
And open to different cultures.
And being open. But again, what does being open to different cultures mean? I think being open to the conversations is something I can relate to. It's something that we can see them beginning to do, you know, set up little forums in the school and then begin to say, what are black learners saying and feeling and so on? What else do you do to begin to transform schools into spaces that are that black skins can feel also an ownership of?
I also think being open doesn't necessarily mean that you understand. So we need to, you know,
take the step up.
Yeah. And especially,
so what does understanding look like? So practically, what would convince you that these schools are beginning to understand?
It would be for them to ask the students of the questions of what can we do to make you feel more at home, rather than just sit there idly and wait for students who they're going to label as rebels to come forward and demand to be heard. And that's the culture that these schools perpetuate right now.
And how would you see, so we are now done speaking, and I think this is part of one of the things you were saying, is we speak and speak and speak and nothing happens.
Yeah, I'm tired of discussions. Yeah.
You're tired of discussions. So what does it look like when they begin to onboard what you've said and
firing
begin to make changes?
Firing a teacher for racism.
They fire racist teachers. What else do they do? Do you change the house names?
They try to change demographics.
I'm fascinated by schools that just have house names. Some of those people were slave owners and so on, and we all sing and dance and win spirit trophies for slave owners.
Can I just say, taking students and pupils for to a psychologist does not help. You know, it does not help the problem or situation.
Give us a little bit of context to that. What do you mean?
For example, when I was at Radin, obviously, because I felt a certain way about the system and how I was treated and how things were going for me there at the time, and the environment I was in comfortable, they decided to, you know, they felt that, okay, no, I need a psychologist to try, you know, deal with my issues. And I'm just like, no, that's not helping. That does not help.
It's not a mental issue.
It's not a mental issue. You can't tell, for example, you can't tell somebody who, you know, shaves their hair or has a different hairstyle to you. No, that's a fashion statement. And come on.
There's obviously a line that needs to be navigated, and I imagine these schools are trying to navigate, right? Which is there are rules, and there can be rules about hair as well, right? And these rules impact white and black. The problem that we're seeing is that these rules are made for white people, and then black people must just fall in line. But is there room for rules to say, if you're black, this is the hairstyle we want. If you're white, this is the hairstyle we want. Or are you saying they should just say, hey, you know, anything goes?
I cannot change who I am.
No. So I'm not saying they say straighten your hair or whatever. Okay. They might just say, look, if it's an afro, it cannot be longer than 5 centimeters, whatever it is.
I just want to interrupt here. I think what's needed is two things. First, that private schools really need to change the creed that they live by. You know, the basic tenets of St. David's: take courage and be a man. Fantastic, but take courage and be a man 50 years ago is totally different to today. You know,
right.
You know, and even more so now than it was back in the 1990s. Technology and technology and lifestyles have completely evolved beyond the points when these schools were set up, and I think that the schools need to adapt to that. You know, greater dialogue between teachers and students definitely wouldn't harm anybody. That's my first point. My second thing about what really needs to change in school, and perhaps maybe even in South African society greater, is that we really need to start developing a culture of tolerance and measured forgiveness. And when I say that, I don't mean that if somebody does wrong, you just slap them on the wrist and send them on their merry way again. No, you know, punishment does have to meet the crime. But in that, we've got to be trying to motivate a culture where people start to realize that even in their wrongdoing, that they can change, and that it's really necessary for them to change.
Yeah, I agree with Irvin there. I just disagree in the specific instance of the housemaster.
Mm.
But I want to go back to what you said, Roy, when you were asking about like examples in terms of just the Eurocentricity. At St. John's last year, there was a celebration or like a memorial held for the Battle of Delville Wood, which is a World War I battle. And sort of like a big ceremony, so much focus on it, so much pomp. You can just see the effort. And like, that's a very disconnected event for South African students, especially for black students. But then at the exact same token, when we have sort of South African incidents like the Sharpeville massacre, when those dates come around, there's almost no effort put in. Last year at St. John's, we tried to sort of throw a community service football fixture and received no support except from one black teacher who felt that what we were doing was admirable.
Mm.
The rest of the school thought it was not a big thing, that like it didn't matter. And those are the events that have shaped South Africa, and that should be shaping South Africa ideologically if we actually want to move forward and build a better country.
Yeah, yeah. Seeing the extent of that.
I really want to get to this question because Rory is challenging me about what does it mean to be black in these schools and generally in South Africa at the moment. And I might have got this wrong. You know, here comes the socialization, right? But I want to understand from you guys, what does it mean to be black? Like, how would this look? Like, would you send your kid to St. John's in Bilo?
No.
Would you send your kid to St. David's? Irvin?
I already do. He's probably going to say that.
It's kind of my plan to get him in there.
Okay, Trina?
No.
Okay, so what would it take in order to feel like your kids could feel that they are South African, that they are black, that they are Zulu, whatever it is, in these schools for you to send your kids there?
I think for myself, a demographic shift has to occur, because when you start reflecting the realities of South Africa's society in the schools, because even white boys from St. John's, who are old boys, will say that they feel St. John's failed to prepare them for the reality of South Africa by providing a context of a white society when South Africa is not that reality.
Also,
but wouldn't you argue that that reality in South Africa is that economically speaking, it's mostly white people that can afford to go to these schools?
Well, if you look at what Hilton have done, they sort of adjusted the acceptance rules to shift the demographic intentionally because they've realized the issue lies in allowing a white culture to exist as a predominant culture.
Hmm.
So where would you guys take your kids to school?
I'm too young to think about that.
Oh my, guys, come on. Is that a cop-out? Because you're very clear, I won't send my kids here. And you've got an idea of what an ideal looks like. Because maybe, is that not the challenge that black parents are faced with? Is a reality that you guys don't have to, you're too young to deal with. And so it's easy to then be idealistic about is, all right, so cool, guys. This sounds all fantastic. But then where do I send my kids to school where they can be what you define as black?
I think our parents now they understand. Because before, to them, Model C, you know, going to this, you know, these schools were, that was like, it was a,
the best sort of accomplishment.
A great achievement. And coming out of there and, you know, me telling you about my experience and how it was for me, definitely shifted the way in which they think and, you know, see.
My goodness, what a conversation. And as it's heating up, we run out of time. I find this, Andrew, very fascinating. I think it's a conversation that's got multiple layers to it. One of those layers is, so I can understand Irvin, right? I everyone said they couldn't relate with somebody in the room. I can probably relate with everyone in the room, and that's why I kept switching sides, because I kind of get it. But I think the difficulty here is you've got things that need to change at a societal level that we need to push for, because these kids don't come from, they don't, you're putting so much responsibility on schools. They come from our families. They come from families that teach this racist stuff, and then they send the kids into, you know, white. Why should it be black learners standing up for black learners? It would be great to see white learners stand up for black learners and say, you know what, this is not good enough, because, you know, if I'm a black learner, I'm going to get in trouble, I'm going to get suspended or whatever. Let us begin to see, and we'll see that when white parents begin to instill this in their white kids. But at the same time, I understand the frustration. I understand what Irvin is saying about, well, there's also a learning opportunity here for my child, for the boys and so on. And how do we as elders in society nurture and make sure that learning opportunity is not lost? Should we throw the baby out with the bathwater, as I think somebody said perhaps before the show? Or should we try and show that there can be redemption? But then the question is, at whose expense? At the expense of these learners who have done nothing? So it's a multifaceted issue. I think it deserves a lot more conversation. Last word?
It also starts at home. I think, you know, people and parents should educate your kids. Educate and let them know about, you know, be open, be... can't be narrow-minded and then go to, you know, schools and expect, you know, your train of thoughts to be the same.
You're saying words, you're not connecting them into sentences, you're believing we can read your mind.
You've been on my case this whole time.
But I get what you're saying. You know, my 3-year-old kid, the thing that amazes me is that he goes to school where there's, to a nursery school where it's predominantly black, right? But then,
very quickly, we're running out of time.
When he goes, when he goes and hangs out with some of my friends on the weekend, many of whom are white, he gets to play with white kids, and for him, it's not a case of, oh, I'm playing with a black kid today, I'm playing with a white kid tomorrow, and I'm playing with a Chinese kid on Monday. You know, for him, it's just a kid, and he's just having fun. And that's what we want in schools.
Pilo?
I was going to say that the reason I stress the demographic is a big issue is because if you look at our history, obviously the parents of the kids in high school right now most of them grew up when South Africa was segregated. Mm. And the reality is that they haven't experienced the open culture that we want the kids now to experience. Mm. So it is the responsibility for the schools to induce this, because it's impossible for the white parents to understand.
Guys, we unfortunately have to leave it there. I think there's going to be just a little 5-minute thought process after this. We're gonna debrief on this. So check out cliffcentral.com/frankly speaking. This has been an incredible show. Frankly Speaking, Black Skins in White Schools. Thank you to all our guests today for coming through. We really appreciate it. Rory, how do you feel? Have yourself a great day. We'll see you later. Thanks so much for listening. Ciao, ciao.
This is CliffCentral.com.